Hello and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of B2B marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we've got over 1,000 participants across the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, well, welcome back. It's really good to see you again. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Johan Heiger, the sales and marketing man at Cynode, for some career advice on surviving and thriving in a difficult environment. Plus, strategist at Six, Nicola Lloyd, talks about brand authenticity. Trainer Jennifer Howe shares a key requirement in marketing skills. And Andrew Last, managing director at Harvard, celebrates some great business marketing. Building yourself a career in business marketing can be tough, particularly in the light of the COVID crisis. I'm joined now by Johan Heiger, the sales and marketing person at Cynode, for some advice on surviving and thriving in a difficult environment. Johan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Dave.
Before we dive into that tricksy problem, maybe you could tell us a bit about what Cynode is and does.
Sure. Cynode is a software as a service platform based out of Sweden, but with customers all over the world. And we say we demystify skills, basically identify, gather, and present skills that are tied to every individual and resource you have, and tie this to personal aspirations, individual development plans, and most of all, making sure these deliver into projects in organizations. So it's a lot about finding efficiencies and working, you know, to reach the project goals thanks to this skills focus. And we've done a lot of progress within the consultancy businesses, and now we're trying to expand this into other areas as well.
And that means you're in a great place to be able to look at this particular challenge of surviving and thriving in a difficult environment. And do you agree that the business marketing environment can be a particularly tough space to build a career in?
Definitely so, Dave. And I think it's become there's two sides of it. My first answer would be yes, it's become much more difficult. And that's perhaps on the CMO level, right? Because of the very fast development that's the industry has been going through, the last 10, 15 years, with all the MarTech technology. I mean, we've gone through the content marketing inbound, and there's so much tools, analysis, and data today. So I think if you're on a CMO role or similar, there's just a lot you need to understand and be able to guide and lead. Now, on the other hand, it has also opened up for a lot of opportunities for more specialized roles that weren't there maybe 10 years ago. So I think there's some good and bad, but it's definitely challenging, and it is difficult to do good business marketing these days.
Okay, so then that begs the question, well, what skills and qualities do you need if you want to get on in B2B?
Well, I think there's a lot. I'd say that, first of all, if you take it from a high level, a business marketer needs to understand sales and work closely with sales on an organizational point of view. And to do that, it's good to have been doing a bit of both sometime in your career. But if not, at least get into the same room, understand the challenges, set common goals, and work together to achieve it. So it's not like, okay, marketing comes with some kind of marketing qualified lead, but sales says, hey, this is not worth pursuing, and so forth. But to become a good marketeer today, I mean, and to lead a team, you need to, let's say, let go of control. You need to allow people to experiment. You need to try out new things. And for me, it's not about the team who has the highest budget. You know, it's the team working smartest and trying new things failing is learning, right? It's not something to be ashamed of. And then it's about really keeping up and you know, constant learning in different ways.
So some of that, I think I can kind of easily go away and apply, but some of it sounds like kind of a skill set that I need to go about and acquire. So for example, the constant learning thing is very, very easy to say, but yeah. How do you go about adopting a constant learning approach?
Yeah, I think we're lucky at Signer because we're working with the consulting industry, and we can see how an attractive consultant, independently on which marketing you're in, it might be IT, it might be marketing, whatever, they need to be top notch, right? And they get those skills by working in very demanding and challenging projects, because you learn so much from hands-on working. But it's also about, you know, picking up, reading, studying, maybe a course here and there. But I think the hands-on work is really important. So if you're running a marketing team, or if you're part of a team, make sure to be part of lots of different assignments. I mean, there's one thing to be specialized in just one field, and that's good. But you need that understanding, which is a bit wider, to really, really add value to the full team, I think. So some ideas of, you know, how to pick up and work on that constant learning is to just set yourself a goal, you know, where whatever it might be. Maybe it's a new type of project, monthly or weekly. Maybe it's following a good podcast or some other live event. Lots of live events these days, as we have very few physical events around the world, unfortunately.
And again, if we kind of put the COVID crisis lens on that, does that change the paradigm for B2B marketing skills?
Yeah, it does. I guess the most obvious change is there are barely any physical events at all, and with the latest restrictions in different countries, wherever they were, they're probably gone by now. But I think we can see a great deal of examples where different companies and organizations have been able to move this to a digital event. I was actually attending an event last week with, I think, over 1,000 participants. It was all digital. And then after, you have a few days to catch up, also to watch the recorded shows that for some reason didn't seem as particular that particular day as if it would have been a live event, right? Mm-hmm. So I think the COVID changes because of that reason, but also it changes so much for the other part of the team we work closely with at work, the sales organization. No more physical meetings for them, no more mingling, no more. So you have to come up with new ideas, right? And data and running, let's say, the whole customer journey digitally is ever more important than before.
Jan Heiger, sales and marketing at Signode. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
People increasingly seek trust and confidence in a brand before they purchase, and that makes brand culture more important than ever. So argues Nicola Lloyd, who is the senior strategist at Six and joins me now. Nicola, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. Really, really a pleasure to be here.
Looking forward to this debate on brand culture, but before we get there, tell us a bit about Six.
So Six is basically a creative experience agency. We work with clients within the education, automotive and financial services and oil and gas sectors in the main. We work to advance brands using strategy, design and technology to really help our clients transform their propositions. For us, it's all about delivering happy employees and loyal customers and helping businesses to thrive through change. We want to help businesses unearth their compelling vision of the future and build kind of digital platforms that transform behavior and translate culture into brand and social impacts. So ultimately, we hope that our clients can, when they get home, be really proud of the work that we do together.
Very good. So in that case, I think you're the person to speak to about brand culture, which is just as well, because that's what we're going to do. So how can brand culture affect customer trust, would you say?
Well, we see brand culture as the next step in the evolution of brand theory. It's really the fusion of external brand with internal culture. I think for years, branding and organizational culture have been like twins separated at birth, nurtured by different teams in remote areas of an organization, kind of coexisting, but never really truly connected. So now as we enter this age of unprecedented transparency, I think businesses can no longer keep their internal and external identities at arm's length. And customers and employees can see all sides and they expect them to be the same. So we think that by removing that gap between action and image, brand culture can really help businesses behave and communicate authentically so that we can create a solid foundation onto which to build customer employee loyalty in what is today's disrupted marketplace. In fact, purposeful, value-driven companies outperform their counterparts in stock price by a factor of 12. And talented employees within those organizations are three times as likely to stay. I suppose, after all, work without purpose is just that. It becomes a meal ticket rather than a vacation.
Okay, but let's put the B2B wrapper on this. Is brand culture really as important within a B2B organization as it is for B2C?
I think it definitely is. We believe that brand culture is integral to any organization that wants to stay relevant and attractive to its internal and external audiences. You know, purpose is what separates humans from the apes, leaders from followers. And the brand you could have bought from the one that you actually did. And that's relevant whether you are in a B2B or a B2C environment. But we have to remember that brand culture and purpose isn't just about altruism. It's about authenticity. It's got to be ingrained in every part of the organization, from the company culture and innovation to community outreach and marketing. Brand culture can really help organizations attract talent, develop their people, sell their products and services, and promote their purpose to the outside world. You know, customers and prospective employees no longer have this small marketing-shaped window to peek through onto your world. They literally have the keys to your front door. So by fusing the worlds of external brand and internal culture around a shared strategy and a clear purpose, brand culture really makes sure that actions a business makes behind the scenes and the stories it shares publicly really reflect one another.
Okay, but so I kind of buy then that it's important for B2B, but if it is so important, how can a business go about building brand culture?
I think embracing brand culture is more of an evolution than a revolution. It's developing that strong brand culture requires kind of organizations and individuals within them to change themselves. It's about putting your purpose and your values at the middle of the organization, which will affect the infrastructure that you have. And it also can change the technology that you need to deploy and change some of the processes that you have in place. I think it's important that marketing and HR make space for sharing ideas and priorities, and that leadership teams undertake soul searching to really identify the reason that their organizations exist and why people should care ultimately. Mm. You know, employees within the organization really need to be treated more like customers. And it's important to also consider supply chain partners and their need to understand and to buy into your vision so that you can support them with the right tools to do so. And decision makers at every level need to be really empowered to do the right thing, even if that means kind of foregoing some short-term wins to aid long-term success ultimately.
So if this were that easy, every organization doing it right, so what would you say are some of the challenges in building brand culture, and also how would you go about overcoming those challenges?
I think it can be challenging, but it can be kind of liberating. As I said, it does require some organizational change and innovation, and it really needs the senior leaders within the organization to be completely involved and completely sign up to the concept of brand culture. It needs to be more than just a pledge. It means putting in place concrete, achievable, measurable goals, and all stakeholders involved, from employees, consumers, and supply chain partners, should their needs should really be understood. And you need to kind of reflect the needs of not just the shareholder at the end of the day, but the needs of all of your stakeholders, and help the leaders within your organization develop a real deep understanding of how they tick and how they undertake kind of reflective practices that can help. You know, they can sometimes feel uncomfortable, and that can be a challenge. It's almost like holding a mirror up to yourself and your organization and asking why. Why do we exist? What are we here for? What are our priorities? How do our actions inspire our employees, shareholders, partners, and consumers? It's about being confident to make some contrarian decisions, not just consensus decisions. And I think it means moving from short-term to long-term strategic focus so that all your teams, including finance, sales, and procurement, really understand that things like focusing on short-term sales activation doesn't really generate demand and it only helps capture the demand that already exists. So if you're looking for growth, you need to think about building your brand culture so that you can demonstrate that kind of growth and demand that you're looking for. I think brand culture becomes quite a competitive moat, a deep competitive moat for you as an organization. And we know that kind of organizations really achieve a lot more when they build kind of brand and brand culture into their way that they operate.
Okay. So let's make this practical then. Which organizations build brand culture well? Let's get some names out there, Nicola.
Well, there are the ones that everyone kind of would kind of talk about, you know, the Starbucks, the Apples, the Googles of this world. But I think there are also other organizations out there, you know, like Natura, who the fourth largest cosmetics brand in the world. And they're, what they're doing is they're really extending outside the traditional values of their boundaries of their profit and loss statements. So they're actually starting to include things around how well they work, well they do for the environment, and their overall impact on society in their actual P&L. And these statements combined with concrete, achievable, measurable goals really demonstrate how they're delivering on their brand culture. Other clients like BP and Castrol, for example, really are building strong brand purpose and a vision right from the CEO downwards to really motivate and excite their organization and lead by example through change. By delivering global mindset programs and collectively investing in new types of value directed at some of the most significant challenges of our time, like climate change. And often that means pivoting their company right from being, for example, with BP, what they were as an international oil company focused on producing resources, to what they want to be in an integrated energy company focused on delivering solutions that will really reimagine energy for the people and planet. So I think that there are lots of different types of organizations that are doing brand culture well, and it's not purely just the large B2C kind of examples that are put out there. There are other organizations like CFM who we're working with who are really celebrating what makes them different and what makes them the same at the same time. And underneath it all, how they can build a tribe and how they can kind of coexist together and build their brand and culture side by side. So yeah, I think there are a lot of organizations that are doing it well.
And encouragingly, some of those are B2B as well.
Exactly.
Strategist at Six, thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome, thank you.
Next up, Jennifer Howe shares a key lesson that she's taken on her career journey to being a B2B marketing professional and executive coach. Jennifer, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's good to see you. So tell us what you're up to right now.
So right now I have got 5 or 6 coaching clients, which I'm taking part in one-to-one coaching with. And I'm also making lots of plans for next year, including a group coaching program.
Cool. Sounds intriguing. So tell us how you got here. What was your, tell us about your journey into marketing and coaching.
Yeah. So my journey into marketing started at university. I majored with my business studies degree, basically because I didn't like the sound of finance or HR. My first permanent job out of university was as an admin assistant in a marketing team in a law firm. So after a year, I got promoted to marketing assistant, and that was my sort of the start of my journey into business marketing. I spent 6.5 years in law firms, absolutely loved it. We had so much fun, lots of events, lots of socializing, lots of packing boxes, lots of printing out letters, really loved my time in my law firms. I then moved on to Thomson Reuters, where I did B2B subscription and renewals marketing. I also started that fun thing called the Sim Diploma while I was at Thomson Reuters as well. I moved on to KPMG, where I joined their regional marketing team. I was there for 7 years and I did 4 different roles in addition to the one I started with. At KPMG, I really learned how to do end-to-end marketing campaigns. I learned how to work with BD and really look at how to generate leads from marketing campaigns. The other amazing thing that I learned at KPMG was the value of moving around a business and working with different teams, learning about different parts of the business as well. And also the concept of bringing yourself to work, which I'm extremely passionate about, was introduced to me at KPMG. I then moved on to work at EY for 3 years, which I absolutely loved. I was a specialist in their advisory marketing team. I was promoted when we had a restructure to lead an agile team. I line managed a team of 7 people and really worked on campaigns from a project management perspective. So my journey into coaching started when I just wanted to learn something new. I didn't know much about it. I also knew that I wanted to develop my people management skills and really use the challenges that I'd faced to help others overcome.
Okay, so I think there's lots of interesting things to kind of pick up on there, but I guess to pick just one or two, you talk about the experience of learning about campaign marketing, and I wonder how you would advise others to go about acquiring that skill and understanding.
So I am a big advocate of the extracurricular CV, what makes you stand out. So it's putting your hand up for anything and everything that's going on in your department and your team in addition to your day job. So I think through my experience, I've learned to see something that someone else is doing and ask if I can get involved. And just really looking at, okay, so what skills do I need for campaign management? What are my strengths in that department? And where are my gaps? And how can I really learn to improve on everything that I'm doing in order to start in a campaign management role?
Okay. And I guess there were so many things to pick up on. You also talked about, I'm going to use the word, a word that you didn't, authenticity. So kind of bringing your whole self to work, which sounds kind of natural, but is actually, I think, something of a leap from where a lot of people are in business. So can you perhaps give us a couple of tips as to how to do that and why it's important?
So authenticity is a really tough one. And I think it's good to accept that it is something that does need constant work. Interestingly enough, authenticity is something that I struggle with. So actually, is it something that I could get help with from a coaching perspective? Possibly. I think authenticity also has a lot to do with confidence. So working out where your confidence barriers are and how you get confidence and just really keeping working at it. I also think it's got a lot to do with asking for help as well. I feel like I've taken quite a long time to be able to have the confidence to ask for help, and also helping others as well. And just really thinking about what you bring to the party and your strengths and really using them to help others.
Okay. And then one final thing to pick up on is the obvious one. You moved into coaching. So how is it that you can make that first leap into becoming a coach?
So my first steps were talking to people in organisations who did coaching. Now, I totally understand that they're all different sizes of organisations, so that might not be possible for everyone. But it was just talking to people, and there is, so the Coaching Academy, I went on their free weekend where you go for 2 full days and there's a lot of you in one room. Not sure that will happen for some time, but just really getting 2 days worth of exposure to being a coach and being coached. So that was a great thing to do. And I think looking at qualifications is a good one, but I did do a lot of research before I signed up for my qualification around coaching and about coaching qualifications. I think also being clear on what you want from coaching. You don't have to know whether you're going to set up a business or, you know, earn 6 figures, as that, you know, that's what everyone promises, but what are your objectives for learning more about coaching?
Thank you for sharing your marketing journey with us, Jennifer Howe. Thank you.
Thank you.
There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by Andrew Lars, Managing Director at Harvard, to celebrate it. Andrew, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Dave. It's great to be here.
Good to see you. So tell us a bit, first of all, about Harvard.
About Harvard. Yeah, well, we're a PR and marketing agency, and we help tech brands make their move. And what I mean by that is we work with technology companies of all sizes. Some of them are blue chips, as well as kind of challenger brands. We help them move into new markets, could be launching new products or driving demand. And our services are everything from sort of brand development and creative through to PR, social and content. And meaning that we just do kind of end-to-end PR and marketing.
So you must have seen some great business marketing then. So what's caught your eye?
Right. Yeah, so 15 years in the B2B game. So yeah, I have seen a lot over the years. What's caught my eye? I mean, tons of stuff. I think to start with, I'd just like to list out the brands that I think just do it best. There may not be surprises here for people, but in no particular order, I think GE, everything they do are bringing to life extremely technical products and services is just fantastic. And another one would be Hiscox, personal favourite. They're not a technology brand, so I'm not pitching for them. What Hiscox do with either their insurance or in the cybersecurity space is really interesting. It's really emotive. It's really different and stands out. So they're ones I'd take a look at. And then the one that I'm going to focus on is actually IBM. So it is probably an obvious one. But in particular, there was this piece of work they did, I think it was around 6 months ago, probably the start of this year, where it was for IBM Watson. And IBM, of course, they've just got a history of firsts in B2B and breaking the boundaries, you know, from Smarter Planet being the first ever content marketing program and all sorts. But with this IBM Watson piece, they've got a history of stunts out in the US. They were doing things like IBM playing Jeopardy and beating chess masters and all of that kind of stuff. And that appeals. But the thing that really stood out to me is IBM Watson tackling Leatherhead FC. Would you like me to explain a bit more about that, Dave?
I would, yes.
So Leatherhead are a team in the lower echelons of the Football League. I think they're a non-league team. And they just did this brilliant piece, IBM, where they went out and they did a fly-on-the-wall documentary with a team who's at the bottom of one of the lowest leagues. You focus on these managers, football managers, shouting and swearing at their team. And you know, they just can't get them motivated. Then IBM Watson come in, they bring in one of their AI experts. Obviously everyone's very cynical about this. And eventually they start to buy into how AI can help them improve. You know, they don't have the resources to have talent scouts and tons of physios and people watching all of their teams. So they instead use the technology and artificial intelligence to help the managers, provide the managers of intelligence that can then help improve the team. And they did, it's five-minute episodes, you know, really good snackable content. It's aimed at an IT audience, which, look, I don't, you know, don't want to go too cliche, but you'd imagine they're all of a similar age and a similar demographic, and this would appeal to them. And you really just buy into the authenticity of the piece. And what's quite nice about it is, you know, they start at the bottom and then they start going up the table. And so you're thinking they're going to end up champions, and they just don't at all. I think there's something like mid-table and they do okay. And it was just, to me, a really nice example of business marketing that didn't try too hard and just felt really human. I mean, they even took, you know, with some of the asides on the episodes, you got to see some of the footballers and their home lives, and there were some that were, you know, bringing up young families. And just, to me, that's the perfect balance of you know, humanizing B2B, knowing your audience, keeping it short, and also you know, something that you think the audience would appeal to.
That's a great example. I've not heard that example before, and it's a very brave move to do something like that. I wonder, would you say, looking at it, that there's stuff that you've taken away and started to apply to your work as a result?
Yeah, we would. I mean, they do the obvious things. There's a microsite there where you've got the, you know, you've got the fascinating content as well as some supporting sales material. So that does the 101 really well. Something I took out of it, though, was the production value wasn't really high production value. You could tell they'd made it fly on the wall, but they hadn't spent a fortune on it. And that suddenly just made it feel, you know, really authentic. And I think that there are times where, when it comes to the likes of a video and content production, you can probably go too far and make things too polished. So a lesson for that was, you know, you don't need to. It, as long as it feels real and you can land your point, then that's what's going to resonate with the audience.
Great answer. Andrew Last, Managing Director at Harvard, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Dave.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Johan Heiger, Nicola Lloyd, Jennifer Howe, and Andrew Last. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn, and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer a feedback. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.